Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis. And this week, my special guest was to be Patsy Cabaret. Unfortunately, Patsy is unwell and unable to join us today, but she will be here on October the 14th. So have a little look at Patsy's website in the meantime and tune in about 6 weeks' time. And in the meantime, Patsy, we all here at Vectors Radio wish you well. But today I'm going to be talking about dementia. Now, I have to make clear that this is my personal experience of it, given that my mother was recently diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So forgive me, it's just something that I hope will resonate with a lot of people, and I think people can relate to what I'm saying. And you know, there's going to be differences and similarities because it's such a varied condition, isn't it? I think everybody's experience of it is so very different, and it manifests itself in so many different ways over different periods of time. So there's no set journey. There's no roadmap. Nobody tells you how it's going to be. And if you're anything like me, you just don't see it coming, because perhaps if you've got family history, then maybe you would think that way. But it's not something we ever wish for our parents. And to watch a loved one go through something like that is just incredibly hard. So today it's a celebration, I think, of those we love in our lives that have now got this terrible condition, and just celebrating who they were, even if today they no longer remember who they are. And that's the saddest thing. And to how we can work together, where to go for help in order to make those last days, months, years, however long, really special for everybody, and how best to cope. I'd like to start by saying that Mum was somebody, I mean, now she can no longer find any words, let alone the right words. So it's very difficult to have conversations with her. It's very difficult to get that special piece of advice that you long to hear, or to tell her that wonderful piece of news, and even share the sad stuff, because she's your mum and you just want, you need her there. And unfortunately, she's still there, but she's unable to communicate in the way she used to. So I find it ironic that this woman, who can now no longer find the words, was the one that helped to teach me to spell and to write. And regular listeners of the show know I'm a writer, so that was my career. So I've really got Mum to thank for that. And I, when I first realised how ill Mum was, I was very shocked in the way I dealt with it. I wrote a poem in order to try and make a little bit of sense of it. So if you'll indulge me, here it is. So this is dedicated to you, Mum. Which way was I looking when I lost my mother? What second did she leave? I never noticed. Perhaps I did not wish to see the sending money to countless so-called charities, crooks who took her pension and took advantage. The day she turned left instead of right when she exited the bank, a place she'd visited for over 50 years, withdrawing and replacing meagre amounts. When she returned, pale and thirsty on swollen purple feet, having walked for hours on sun-seared pavements, she could not explain. I made her tea, relieved she was home. We were together, but alone. This year, Mum forgot my birthday. I wasn't sad the day had slipped her mind, just upset she could no longer remember the cake she had baked on stifling August afternoons, bent over the cooker, melting chocolate. The gifts she had saved for but could ill afford. Tiny silver ballet shoes on a chain, a wicker sewing basket, and silk threads with which to reweave broken dreams. I wonder, Are her memories stowed away, the key broken in the lock? Or have they slipped away unseen, like shadows silently escaping underfoot? I shared my cake, happy she was safe in my home. We were together, but alone. My mum's sharp, never misses a trick. She's not ill, she's old, I reassured. I'll get it in a minute, she cried, struggling to recall my daughter's name. It begins with S, said Sophie. Susie, Mum replied, recalling the name of her first pet. Retired from her paper round, aged 80, her job every day for 30 years, hands smeared with newsprint, walking the streets, delivering to those who never knew her face, who did not care when she slipped and fell on pavements laminated with ice, so long as they didn't have to risk their necks. When she got pneumonia, she refused to eat or drink. 3 doctors came. She turned her head away, and I cried in the kitchen, arguing with my father on the phone. Call you. How can I talk to you when Mum is too sick to speak? Want me to say something to her? 10 years estranged and never a word between them. I often wonder what he said. But I did hear her reply, Okay, darling, yes, yes, I will. The man she had loved all her life had made it right, but they never spoke again. I made her tea, she drank it. We were together, both of us alone. Talk to me, Mum. My words falling like stones into the sea. I want her back, the woman who made me. The woman who made me who I am, whoever that may be. I smile. She nods. I make her tea. She forgets to drink it. We are together. Soon I will be alone. So, like I say, that's for Mum, and it was one way of making sense of all the uncertainty that was unfolding in front of us, really, as a family. It started, and again, obviously, people, it all sort of begins in different ways with different people, but with Mum, it was looking back, and that's the key, I think, looking back at the time. I don't know, it just didn't occur to us. She was interacting with all the direct mail, you know, that dreadful stuff you get, the bogus charity letters, the lottery ones saying that you've won £1 million, just send us 30 quid and we'll send you, you know, a holiday in America or £25 million. And you would, you know, you cannot believe how cruel they are and how they get people in and write again and again, and the letters become sort of more demanding or more pathetic. And these, I'm not talking about bona fide charities, I am talking about these bogus charities set up by people who are just keeping the right side of the law. I mean, actually, in Mum's case, the CID got involved, and they looked at every piece of direct mail that she'd been sending the checks off to. And they said none of it was breaking the law. They just kept the right side of it. So, you know, kind of very clever people in a very nasty way, making money out of people like my mother. And I'm sure a lot of people, all of you out there, maybe have had kind of similar experiences. But Mum was very private, very independent, and didn't want us to know, you know, about her finances, or her, that was her business, her life was her business. And it wasn't until I think that became too much for her that she got overwhelmed with the weight, literally, of these letters. I mean, she would get them by the sack load, you know, by the bin liner full, and sort of cluttering her house. And I said to her one day, Mum, really, can we help? Can we help you sort this? And she said yes, and I had no idea what I was going to find, but we were opening the mail that she was intending to post off, and there it was, full of checks and cash to these people. And it was very depressing. It was a very difficult task to see that my mother had been conned in the way she had and was just sending off, you know, sort of meagre amounts to people. But it was her pension, it was her savings that she was parting with. And I said, "Mum, you know, really these people don't need your money." And she said, "They do. I'm helping them." And they'd spun such a good yarn that that's what she believed. And just heartbreaking. And she was very defensive because she'd started to treat it almost like a job of work. So the letters would come in, Mum would read every word, act on them, which meant writing a cheque or putting, you know, a fiver or a tenner in an envelope and sending it off. And this particular day when we'd opened, I suppose, over 100 envelopes that she was about to send off, and I was with my daughter, and I, as I said, I found the whole thing very distressing and very difficult, and I thought, I can't open any more of these. And I said to Sophie, "Let's just throw them all away because I can't cope with this." And she said, "No, Mummy, because there's money in here." She said, "Let me just open one more envelope." So she opened this final envelope, and there was a cheque that my mother had written for her life savings to some nebulous company. And thank goodness, you know, my daughter Sophie had insisted on opening that, because that would have gone, never to be seen again. So, you know, if you've got elderly relatives, I know it's very hard, but just be on the lookout for this, because it's a wicked money-making scam. But looking back, Mum was sort of, you know, spoken to by uniform police, so, you know, they were lovely with her and explained that these guys were crooks and not to engage with them. And obviously my mum of yesteryear would never have thought, you know, would have said, "Yes, no, of course I won't." But because looking back, you know, she was already getting very ill and her judgment was impaired. She thought she was still in control and in charge, and she was very much taken in. So the fact that she wasn't listening to the police when they said, "Please don't send any more money," that she was still justifying sending the cheques, I think looking back is a marker of where it all began. But of course, like I said earlier, we don't want to think that these things are happening. And going back to the poem, when I waited for her to come home one day, I mean, Mum, bless her, was kind of always there for me, you know, when I knocked or put my key in her door. There she was, just waiting for me. And this particular day, she wasn't. And so I knew something wasn't right. And I thought, well, she'll just be down the road, she won't be long. But I waited 2 hours for her. And she came home, and it was a scorching summer's day. And like I say, she was so disorientated. She was dehydrated. And I made her a cup of tea. And I said to her, you know, "What happened?" And she said, "Oh, well, I landed up walking." You know, like I say in the poem, she turned left instead of right. Well, my mum would have known, but she just kept going and then walked back in the heat. And I said, "Why didn't you get a bus?" And this, you know, she just didn't seem to see that that would have been an option. But I don't know. I suppose, looking back, I guess I must have been in denial, because my mum was always so sharp, so on it. But Alzheimer's, dementia, they rob the smartest, brightest, most wonderful people of their memories. And even that, the degrading nature of what it does robs people of their dignity. And I think that's possibly the saddest aspect of it. I hope that they don't realise they've been robbed of their dignity, but Mum certainly sort of has no way of saying. And again, it's my ignorance when this began. I didn't realise. I thought dementia was about forgetting somebody's name, not knowing what day of the week it is or who the Prime Minister was. I had no idea the reach of it, that you can actually forget how to make a cup of tea and how important it is to know how to make a cup of tea. Because if you think making a cup of tea isn't one action, you actually break it down and there's probably about 20 things you have to remember, from where the kettle is, the fact you have to plug it in, switch it on, that it has to be full, then where do you fill it, the tap. It's a very complicated task. And towards the end, this completely defeated my mum. This woman who lived off tea and biscuits and cake could no longer remember that rather complicated process, and can't remember how, you know, what happens to go to the toilet even. These very basic things that people have been doing all their lives. I mean, my mum's 90 now, and you would imagine that those things would be ingrained on the brain forever, but they're not. And it just sort of takes your breath away. And then you think, well, if you couldn't remember how to make a cup of tea, why didn't you go to the tap and get some water? But again, they don't realise that they're thirsty. They think they've probably just had a drink. And I was taking to leaving lots of non-perishable food out on the table for mum to snack on in between meals. But again, it robs you of the memory. So you either convince yourself you've just eaten and you're not hungry, or the actual how to open a packet, what to eat, how to eat it, do I need to eat? It's just phenomenal. And now my mother's in a care home, and you can see so many people, you know, just like mum, kind of there, not really understanding, not really interacting. And the staff are wonderful. They're just fabulous with her, and they're so loving. And I think that's the most important thing in the world, is to see your parent when you have that moment where you hand them over to someone else for full-time care, and you know they're loved. And you can see that is a genuine bond that has been formed. That's so reassuring. So I would say to anybody that's looking at old, you know, long-term care for a relative, that's one of the main things. You know, there's lots of other tick boxes, and you can, you know, get these lists from Age UK who will help you, you know, source a home that's right, that's the best. But don't, you know, always make sure that you're happy, that your loved ones are happy, because that is absolutely, absolutely key. And it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, my mum, bless her, when the psychiatrist came to my house to assess her, you know, bless her, she was on really good form. And he said to her, oh, you're obviously here with your daughter. So where are you now? And my mum looked him square in the eye and she went, I'm here. And he went, well, yes, but where are you? Where are you? And she went, I'm here. And he said, okay, let's try it another way. Where does your daughter live? And she said, she lives here. And I thought, oh, God love her. You know, she's not wrong, is she? You know, it was absolutely correct. And then he said, okay, so how long have you been here? And I think he meant on the Isle of Wight, but mum just looked at the clock and she went, about half an hour, which again was absolutely correct. You know, I've been and got her from the home and I brought her round. And so everything she said, I thought they were really good answers. He was less impressed, I have to say. But, you know, she's still an absolute darling. And the most wonderful thing recently was my daughter's had her first baby. So mum has a little grandson called Archie, and Sophie brought baby Archie into the home, and mum just lit up. And they say this is a thing, you know, that people, elderly people with dementia and Alzheimer's, that young children and babies and animals can really bring back something in them, take them back to, I suppose, a very happy time perhaps in their life. I don't know, but it certainly brought mum alive. And I don't know, some, they do dolls therapy, where you can take a doll and let the person with dementia or Alzheimer's just play with that doll, just interact with the doll. And there's a remarkable piece of footage on online, and it shows an elderly woman who they say hadn't spoken for 2 years, just hadn't been able to with her illness, and yet you can see her chatting away to this doll as if it's a real baby. And it's bittersweet, you know, it's as heartbreaking as it is wonderful. So I took in, when I was sorting through my mum's house, she'd kept a lot of stuff from my own childhood, and there was a beautiful life-size doll that I'd had when I was a little girl called Carol, and it was all dressed complete with a beautiful pink and white cardigan that mum had knitted her. And so I got her all washed and cleaned up, and washed all the clothes and redressed her, and I took her into Mum. And I thought, I don't know, that's kind of a really nice end for Carol, the doll, to have find. So she was there when I was a little girl, and now she's there for Mum to sort of be a companion at the home and hopefully help bring back some really happy memories for Mum. So after the break, I'm going to be talking about some new breakthroughs and in sort of drug therapy for Alzheimer's, and also chatting about the wonderful work that the Admiral Nurses do and Dementia UK. Okay, so join me after the break. Thank you for listening.
The Lunchtime Social Debate of Employment Law, a solicitor's firm with a difference.
This is Vectors Radio.
Retinitis pigmentosa is a disease of the eye that leads to loss of vision and blindness. It causes the retina, the light-sensitive part of the eye, to degenerate and sight to be lost. RP Fighting Blindness. The local RP Fighting Blindness group on the Isle of Wight has been established since 2006. If you live on the island and you'd like to get involved, please contact Colin MacArthur at talktalk.net or make a donation at www.rpfightingblindness.org.uk/IOW.
Andy Gustar has details of the £10 meal deal at Hamilton's Fine Foods.
Oh, that's been running for quite some time, and we're still doing it for £10, and I think, why change something that's really working well? You get a fresh chicken in there, 400 grams of steak mince, you get a pound of sausages, and you get a quarter of ham. All of that for £10. There's a lot of meals there for a family of two or three. The important thing to add to that is it's quality food as well. You must, I think, for the sake of your own health, look to a quality product which is going to be that good for you.
Hamilton's are in Newport, they're in Pyle Street. Where else are you?
We're in Cowes High Street, Witten Bridge. We also have a shop now on Dodder Industrial Estate.
Hamilton's Fine Foods, the best local butcher in town.
White Sight Glasses. Take your prescription along to the friendly team in Cross Street Ryde. White Sight is a boutique shop selling budget to designer frames and sunglasses. Stockists of Gucci, Dior, Dolce & Gabbana, Ray-Bans and many more. You'll be spoilt for choice. White Sight's an independent retailer, so you can shop locally and be assured of first-class service and great glasses. Visit them in Cross Street Ryde or check them out on www.whitesight.co.uk.
Hi, it's me, Chip here. I've got my own dance show. The dance show is called Chip's Dance Hall Show. I will be playing a variety of dance tunes that you can dance and tap your feet to. So come and join the party from 10 p.m. till 11 on Sunday night.
Stay social and get in touch. Add us on Skype. It's Vectis.radio. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate, brought to you by Real Employment Law Advice, your legal lighthouse guiding you through a sea of employment law. A solicitor's firm with a difference. Go to realemploymentlawadvice.co.uk for more information.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis. Unfortunately this week my guest was Patsy Cabaret, but Patsy's unwell, so it's just me flying solo this week, but we will be joined by Patsy Friday, October the 14th at 1 o'clock, so have a little peek at her website, and yeah, she's a very surprising lady, so I think we're in for some fun on that day. But today we're talking about dementia, and it's just to be clear, it's just my personal experience with my mother. So please, you know, forgive that. I haven't got anyone here to interview, but I have got some signposts for people who are perhaps facing this at the moment themselves. I think for me, I was very lucky. Social services really did spring into action and were fantastic in helping us. And as were the people at the care home, Polar's Care Home here on the Isle of Wight, they have just been amazing. So they made all the practicalities of putting Mum into full-time care very, very pain-free, I'd say, very stress-free. So because once someone you love has got dementia or Alzheimer's, the emotional impact is devastating. So you're coping with that because, in a sense, I feel I've lost my mother, even though she's still here, because I was saying earlier, it's very hard to speak to mum because she can't find the words to share the good news and the bad news, all that fantastic stuff that your mum has been there all your life for. Just can't happen anymore. So all the wonderful news you can't share, and when you need that shoulder to cry on, it's very hard. You just can no longer do it. But as I was saying earlier, we do still have some smiles and laughs, and mum is an absolute joy to have around and visit and bring home and share things with. And the sad things are, when I looked through our house, I found her wedding dress, and this was from 1958. Very beautiful cream dress with sort of gold threads shot through it. Just stunning, and a tiny little minute dress. And I tried to sort of squidge myself into it, which I did without doing the back up at all. And I showed her, and she said, "Oh, it's lovely." And I said, "Yes, it is lovely, and it's yours." But she was just quite blank. She didn't realise that was her wedding dress, and I thought that was very, very poignant. Not as poignant as the love letters I found from my father to her in the months before they got married. And they were just very beautiful, innocent letters, and it was lovely for me to see those and to see how much love there had been between them, particularly as they later divorced. So it was lovely to find these very special letters, and I have to say I felt wrong, really, in a way, in some ways, reading them, because they were a one-to-one communication. They were from my father to my mother for her eyes only. But in the light of what had happened, I just felt compelled to read them, and I'm glad I did, because they were absolutely beautiful. And I showed them to Mum, and I read her some little excerpts, and I gave them to her to have a look through. No idea what they were, who they were. This man, as I say in the poem, that she had loved all her life, she couldn't remember. Day I thought would never come, and I still am in shock, really, and I can't credit that an illness can do that to someone. Just horrific, really. And so she didn't know who my father was, but she also, I found some very old certificates, Sunday school certificates and confirmation certificates, baptism certificates, and they're all in her maiden name. And I showed them to her because they're beautifully, inscribed and illustrated. And I showed her, and I showed the name, and she didn't know who this person was, so she didn't know who she was. Again, very difficult to accept that somebody has reached that point. The lovely thing is, and people always say to me, does she know who you are? And she does, and she knows who my daughter is, even though she can't remember her name. But she nonetheless lights up when we see her, which is lovely. And I know that obviously the illness will probably rob her of that memory as well as time goes on. So I'll have to deal with that as best I can when that day arrives. But at the moment, it's lovely that she at least knows who we are. And she still loves her cake. She's a real little cake fiend at the home, so they know, she doesn't just... They say, "What would you like?" And Mum just has all of it, which is brilliant. So she knows what she likes in that department. And there was a very special moment that was like a little miracle, really. She, when my daughter was pregnant in the latter stages, she was quite poorly, and I was a little bit worried. And I thought, well, I'd like to talk to Mum about this, because I normally would, but I thought, well, there's no point, because she won't understand what I'm saying, it's quite complicated. But I went to visit her, and I thought, no, I've got to share it with her, because she's my mum and I need to tell her. So I sat and I held her hand, and I told her, and I guess she saw the concern in my face and heard the anguish in my voice, and somehow sort of wrestled every last bit of cognitive ability and was able to say to me, "It will be fine, and he will be fine, the baby will be fine, Sophie will be fine, they're under the hospital, they will be fine." Now, that's quite a normal, reassuring thing for any mother to say under the circumstances, I know, but this is from a woman who can no longer find the right word, can no longer find any word. But I think in that moment, I think it's a little bit like when somebody will lift a car, you know, off a child, and that somehow they find this superhuman strength in that moment. I think Mum somehow just managed to, like I say, pull it all together and give me these words of wisdom. And that meant the world to me. And I said, are you sure? Do you really believe that? And she said, oh, yes, he will be fine. And then I tried to speak to her about something else, but she'd gone. And it was like talking to the oracle. You know, I had Mum back for 2 minutes when I really, really needed her about something absolutely so important. And there she was, giving me all the right advice, saying all the right things, and just reassuring me so that I could... I was fine after that. You know, I just thought, yep, Mum's spoken, it's okay. So things are not as grim as they often sound. You know, you can find these light moments, these joyful moments, and we've found a lot of... you know, I've got an old 1950s dress of hers that she would have worn as a young girl. Excuse me, she's 90 now. And I thought, oh, that's lovely. And I thought it might be a bit too big for Mum. But so I had my eye on it, obviously. Wouldn't come anywhere near me. So Mum is now wearing this and just looks like an absolute princess. You know, just stunning. And everybody comments on how lovely it is. And, you know, she wears her jewellery and... yeah, it's lovely. So, like I say, she's a little princess where she is, and she's very, very happy there, and they just adore her. So that's Polar's home. So thank you to all the staff there, because you've just been wonderful and made a very difficult transition as stress-free as possible for me and my family. So those of you who can perhaps relate to some of what I'm saying, or if you've got a sneaking worry perhaps about a friend or relative, I would say the best place to start is your GP, and that's where we started, and then from there sort of contacted social services. DementiaUK.org are a wonderful organisation. They're right on the button with the latest developments. They know where you can get help in your area. So they're wonderful people to contact. And I'd never heard of Admiral Nurses. I'd never needed to know about them, I suppose. But, oh, I'm so pleased. You know, I put a post on Facebook about a mum, and somebody very kindly commented and said that we could get support from Admiral Nurses. And we've got 5, I believe, as of Monday on the island. One is for end-of-life care at the Earl Mountbatten Hospice. But there are 4 others. And they're NHS-funded, the service. And the access can be made through the memory service at St Mary's Hospital, where they carry out an assessment to identify the needs of the people with dementia. And are under care of the memory service. But like I say, your first port of call, I think, would be your GP. And then you can be referred on, your loved one can be referred on from there. And I think this was initiated by Lady Sally Grills, Bear Grills' mum to you and me, who is an absolute champion for dementia care here on the island. And she initiated this project, this appeal, 2 years ago. And what... The work of these Admiral Nurses is so vital and so key, because they work with the family to ensure that they're able to understand and cope with the changes that occur. And as we've been saying, you know, these are things you can't predict. You may think, as I did, that you have a kind of basic understanding of what the condition entails, but it's like anything until you've actually experienced it. And nothing prepares you for it. So it's wonderful that there are these experts in their field that are here purely, you know, to support the families and give them the knowledge to understand the condition and its effects, and then help sort of pass on some skills to improve the way we communicate with our loved ones and better understand how they're behaving. Because it is a very, you know, it is a frustrating condition, and it's very sad that things are no longer as they are. You can't quite believe it, and I think you're in a state of shock. And in many ways, to me, it still feels very much like a bereavement, in that the person you knew is no longer there. So you're having to adjust to relating to aspects of that person. But the key ones that you remembered and you held on to dearly have often disappeared. And it's, I think ADL nurses are very key in working with families and enabling them to stay together for as long as possible. And I think ultimately, wherever that is possible, that's what most of us really want, isn't it? We want our loved ones with us, if we're in a position where we can look after them, to stay with us and enjoy their company, and for them to be in the comfort of their own home, if that's possible, for as long as they can. So I think anything that gives you hope, that gives you something else, because you can feel very lonely and isolated with dementia. I think it's like a lot of, when you become a sort of main carer for someone, you can feel very isolated and think you're the only person sort of coping with it. But obviously we know, unfortunately, it is very widespread with everybody living longer. It's one of those conditions that we are experiencing, perhaps where our own parents wouldn't have done with their parents, because people died younger then, and now this is all coming to the fore. And to a certain extent, I think we're all in shock, because it's not something that we understand or that we're that familiar with as individuals, because you go along in your life and your mum's and your dad, and you think they're always going to be there, and then all of a sudden they're still there, but they're not the people you remember. So the Chief ADL Nurse and Executive Officer for Dementia UK, Hilda Hayhoe, said, we're pleased that the island now has the support of our ADL nurses, whose dementia expertise aids the physical and emotional well-being of people with dementia and their carers. The ADL nursing model is proven to give carers the skills and emotional support they need for prevention of crises, and this helps to reduce the contact time of affected families with GPs, nurses and social workers, and reduce health and social care costs. So, like I said, any help that you can get, it's like having a new baby. You know, just say yes, just embrace that help, because you're going to need it along the way somewhere. Well, I certainly know, I haven't had my appointment yet. They're coming to the house in a couple of weeks' time, and I know I need that meeting, and I'm kind of eagerly anticipating that, because every day brings a new challenge for me. Just when I think I've got my head round what's going on and I think I'm coping, you realise actually you're not really, and that you're still, you know, you're still absolutely devastated and not coping at all with it, particularly if other things are going a bit pear-shaped in your life and you're feeling a bit low, then this then hits you very hard again. Perhaps it's easier to sail through, like anything, when things are going great, but the minute it all goes like I say, a bit pear-shaped, then this is something I think that hits really hard, which is why I was thrilled when I picked up yesterday's Daily Mail, September the 1st edition, and the front headline screamed, "Alzheimer's Revolution, Breakthrough Drug Could Stop Dementia From Ever Developing." And I think that's just what a wonderful notion that would be, because at the moment the existing therapies ease dementia symptoms, but this drug, aducanumab, is the first to tackle the underlying damage in the brain. So this would prevent it from ever starting. I mean, how wonderful that would be. And obviously, it's a revolutionary new drug, and it'll be trialled in Britain. But it's like all these drugs, it's going to be trialled. So it's not available now, sadly. But it's been tested on relative small amounts of people in America, and the results are earth-shattering. You know, they're very, very promising. However, the piece is key to point out that drug trials on small amounts of people that do very well, perform well, can actually unravel spectacularly when tested on larger amounts. So I think we have to sort of err on the side of caution and not get too excited at this stage, but it's wonderful that this research is going on, and you've got people like Dr. James Pickett of the Alzheimer's Society saying these results are the most detailed and promising that we've seen for a drug that aims to modify the underlying causes of the disease. And it works by tackling a rogue protein that clogs up the brain and destroys its cells. In preliminary tests, the protein all but vanished in a year. So, I mean, wouldn't that just be wonderful? Too late for my mother, sadly, but it's wonderful to know that there are terrific scientists out there working really hard to progress medication like this. Stephen Salloway, who took part in the research at the Butler Hospital in Rhode Island, said, "This is the best news I've had in my 25 years of doing Alzheimer's research." So there are key people that are getting very, very excited about this. So, you know, I just hope against hope that, and there's a lovely illustration here showing how this drug can destroy dementia cells. And it's wonderful. You think, go, blast them away. So we've got Professor David Allsop of the University of Lancaster saying these findings could be a game changer if the effects on memory decline could be confirmed, because at the moment, Alzheimer's and other forms of dementias affect over 850,000 people in Britain, with a case diagnosed every 3 minutes. So 850,000 Britons. So this aducanumab was pioneered at the University of Zurich, and I just hope, you know, that all the funding, you know, the great fundraising that people do, is obviously, it's wonderful to know that all that good stuff is having an effect, and could possibly just stop this in its tracks. So brilliant scientists, go. I hope all the research trials ongoing are successful, and that, you know, this drug can get a license and give people hope, because it just shouldn't be happening. It's such a cruel thing. And when I look at Mum and I talk to Mum, and I think, how much of what you see and hear are you actually processing, but you can't convey to me that you've understood it, and that's really sad too. It just makes you question everything, and really the visits at the moment are just me giving her little bits of information about the baby, sharing photos, so we share sort of the new stuff that's going on, and involve her that way, and always hold her hand, and I look at her eyes, and she smiles, and she understands what I say, and that she's following the emotion of everything. And what was so lovely is I found a photo of her mother, and interestingly, Mum's mum died when she was two, and she was brought up in an orphanage, so all she ever had of her mother was this one sepia, very beautiful photo. And given, if you remember earlier on, I was saying Mum didn't know who my father was, didn't recognise her own name when it was written down, her maiden name, that is, and, you know, didn't know her wedding dress. And then I showed her this photo of her mother, and I said, "Who's that?" And she said, that's my mum, that's my mother. And that was lovely. But of course, that would have been such a key thing for her to have had, just all she ever knew. And it's very hard for me to imagine, having had my mum all my life, to imagine that that's all she ever had, and that most special person in her life was one photograph. So obviously it had a key importance and a key value to her. And photos of her own father, she recognises her dad. So going back a long, long way. But all her nursing books, she was a nurse for a long time. She didn't know they were her study books, where she'd made copious notes and done sort of very detailed diagrams. She didn't know all that hard work had been hers. But lovely enough, one of the carers at Polar's, Mavis, who is just fantastic, she does a lot of art therapy, and she told me very happily how brilliant my mum was at drawing, and that mum particularly liked drawing birds and flowers, and she'd saved me some of these sketches that mum had did. And I was able to go home and find stuff that mum had done for me when I was a little girl, sort of beautiful paintings, and say to Mavis, yeah, you know, she is a bit of an artist, and just a beautiful, beautiful artwork, and also wrote beautiful stories. And it's lovely that, you know, my daughter is an artist, and I write. So all that stuff has come through in her children and her child's daughter. But it's lovely that there it is, you know, she's still got this wonderful ability to do her art. I mean, it's not the gorgeous, you know, quite as good as it was, but it's still there, and she enjoys doing it, and she gets a real kick out of doing it. And apparently she's very competitive with some throwing sort of frisbees, which I just can't imagine, because she's very sweet. She weighs about 6 stone. She's about 4'9" in her stocking feet. And the idea of mum sort of sitting on these chairs throwing frisbees and scoring points, but they all win, nobody loses. But I just can't imagine it. And when she's not doing that, she's in the living room watching the horses, because my grandfather, her daddy, was a real gambler and a great fan of the Gee Gees. And so mum is obviously kind of reliving something there, so she really enjoys watching that. And I think it's just about finding those special things that unlock a memory, a happy memory. And you don't know what it is. You know, you can go in, I can go in with sort of lots of photos of my daughter when she was a baby, and sometimes, you know, she enjoys looking, but they don't mean something, but something else will just be the trigger. So I think it's having a lot of patience and a lot of time, and just readapting to the new mum, the new dad, the new friend in your life, because that's what they are. There's little echoes of the past, but the sadness comes, I think, when you try and want them back as they were, because that's not going to happen. It's about accepting who they are now, and what they need from us. What do they want us to do? How do they want us to be? And just making things as special as possible. I'm off to see mum in a minute, and she's got a real penchant for Milky Way, so a very simple gift, but I know her eyes will light up when I bring in a twin bar of Milky Way. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope it's been helpful. And if a loved one is in this similar situation, then like I say, you know, first port of call is always your GP, and dementiauk.org, their website, is a mine of information, or Age UK can signpost you to other help. So I wish you, you know, a good journey and a loving journey, and in the future, let's hope that our brilliant scientists sort of turn up something that gives us a better kind of result than what we've got now. Well, thank you so much for listening. Next week, my guest is going to be Ireland MP Andrew Turner. So do let me know if there's any questions you'd like to ask Andrew. Visit me on my Facebook page, Joan Ellis, and I'll try and get in as many as I can. But I'm very interested to get to know Andrew, the man, Andrew Turner, the person, because we all know he's the MP, but perhaps don't know Andrew himself very well, and what he likes, what he stands for. So I'm very much looking forward to speaking to him next week, so I do hope you can join us. Okay, thank you so much for listening. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Bye-bye.